Hello, and welcome to the PC Gamer Show for November 29th, 2017. My name is James Davenport, an associate editor here at PC Gamer. And today, joining me is Wes Fenlon, features editor.
Hello.
How you doing, man?
Good, good. I like your introduction there, as though no one knows who you are. Come on, James. Everybody listening right
now. I don't know about that.
They know exactly
who. You never know
this
if you're going to get that new viewer, and they're going to be like, who the fuck is this guy? Yeah. Also joining us for the first time on the show, Austin Wood, our indie news editor. How you doing, man?
Hello.
He's the computer.
Nobody knows who I am. So.
Now they will, and they've probably been reading a lot of your stuff.
Let's just introduce Austin for the whole show.
Yeah, pretty much.
Tell us the story of your entire life, Austin.
Yes, day one.
I was born at age 6 without a face.
What the fuck? It's hell of an origin.
Well, you grew a face very well. Good job.
Yes,
congrats
nice
on that.
Nice work.
Austin and I are both from Georgia, which is cool. I do not live in Georgia anymore, but we're from pretty, I don't know, you live in Atlanta still, right, Austin? You probably are within like a 30-minute drive of where I used to live.
I'm within like a 40 minute drive from the heart of Atlanta, so I can kind of get to everything.
If you don't know Atlanta, it's a pretty big city. That it's not a big city in the way New York is, but it just sprawls. It's just a huge suburban sprawl.
You got space out there. Also, big question.
There's some trees.
What's up with three Georgia people at PC Gamer? None of y'all coming at me. With that deep South accent. None of y'all.
The third one being Bo Moore, who's on the show.
Yeah, I thought it was Bo.
I'm slowly planning a takeover.
Yeah.
And then eventually I'm just going to move all of PC Gamer to Georgia. That's the kind of decision
I can bring in more Georgians over time.
Oh, God. I've heard horrible things about the community. I can't imagine just like sitting up late at night typing.
It's pretty gross.
Pretty gross. Anyway.
welcome from Georgia, Austin.
Welcome, man.
Yeah.
we got some good stuff to talk about today. I reflecting on the week deciding what to talk about, I wanted to keep it light on the sort of negative subjects like that have been constantly, at the tip of everyone's tongue.
What are you talking about, James?
Boxes that may or may not contain items that you may or may not enjoy.
I like boxes.
I do too. Who doesn't like boxes? We are going to touch on Destiny 2's sort of like XP confusion that came up over the last week. But then we're going to do something fun. It's the end of the year. We're nearing the end of the year.
Getting close.
And we're all, in our meetings, we're talking about Game of the Year. We're talking about all of our end of the year coverage. And we're all reflecting quite a bit. And something I've been doing for the last, 2 to 3 years since I've been here is collecting the best game music of the year.
Mm.
And I'm going to quiz you guys on that. So we're going to listen to some tunes, and you're going to have to guess.
Is the quiz just you asking us if it's good game music or not?
Is this good? Yes or no? I should do that. It's probably a better idea.
Did you do like a mid-year kind of best music of 2017 so far? I seem to remember that.
Yeah. So I do it twice a year, halfway through and at the end. There's just so much, and it's I don't know. I think the middle of the year after the big kind of spring deluge of games is a nice time to reflect again before you forget. I feel like that's the problem with game of the year. Saving all of it for the end of the year is there's so much coming out now that by the end of the year there's undoubtedly. I forgot Resident Evil 7 came out this year. And
it feels like a lifetime ago.
I know.
And for music, it's extra hard, right? Because as many good games as there are, there will then be 20 to 50 songs from that game potentially. So
definitely.
Or Nier Automata, which has like 500.
Jesus.
That soundtrack is excellent. But I'm not going to quiz you on that because that's a dead giveaway. I think you guys would both know. But before we talk about any of that stuff, I kind of want to know what you guys have been playing. So, Wes, what's up, man?
Over the Thanksgiving holiday, I spent it with my girlfriend and her family, and I did not play any video games, but we did solve a 750-piece jigsaw puzzle.
Fuck yeah. You know what? I love puzzles.
And I want to tell you, it was a hard freaking jigsaw puzzle.
Let me ask you, what was on the puzzle? Because that matters quite a bit.
There was Mickey Mouse.
Okay.
There was also Minnie Mouse.
Minnie Mouse.
And then there was, some other shit in the background, like a restaurant and a street and some
trees. So it was busy. It was busy.
So the thing that made it really hard is it was a painting turned into a puzzle. So I think Thomas Kincaid maybe is the name of the painter. Okay. So it's this very brushstrokey, I don't know shit about styles of painting, not an oil paint, but I don't know. It's probably not even watercolor either. But anyway, because it was a painting and not something with more distinct separation of line and color, there could be a lot of pieces where it was not clear what color would, you know, fit in the gap between two pieces. So it took us like a good 3 days to three or four days to fully put this thing together. But it was very satisfying to finish
I'm
it off.
Yeah, that's good to hear, man. I'm glad the tradition is not dying.
Puzzles still got it.
Puzzles still fucking rule.
Cool. Other than that, I'm playing Nier Automata, which I finally got around to about maybe like a month ago or so. Good. I started playing it. And about a week ago, I finished the first run through, kind of the main ending A, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
If you aren't real familiar with Nier, the game is kind of built to be replayed multiple times, and new pieces of the story kind of fit in as you play it and replay it. So I'm now in the middle of kind of the second run of the game,
or gotcha.
I'm early in the second run, but I'm guessing it'll go a bit faster than the first time.
Cool. And how are you feeling?
I really like that game.
Yeah.
I really enjoy the combat. I think it feels really good. It's not obviously as complex as a Bayonetta or something.
It's almost relaxing.
It's so stylistically satisfying.
You can kind of sit back and watch it a little bit.
It's exactly. It's like there are some of those games where they've put so much focus on just looking cool, and you just press a button and like watch some shit happen, kind of like quick time event or, you know, there are lots of ways to design around that. But I think Platinum for Nier found a really good balance between like, this is actually a decently technical combat system in the way that their games always are, but it still kind of has this element of shit's just gonna look cool when you mash the X button. So like there's a depth there that you wouldn't get in a lot of games that are just about looking cool,
right?
But it still is not nearly as difficult to put in these complex combos like you would have to in Bayonetta, to just kind of, you can just sit there and just watch your character do some really cool stuff and then still have the responsiveness to like dodge on a moment's notice when you need to, and then do something cool because you dodged an attack. So I enjoy it a lot. The whole vibe of the game is very weird, and you know, it's it's a lot like the first Nier in that way. So I dig that, and I hope that the second run through surprises me more with new things happening, new angles on the story that I
this will be where I'm really curious what you think about the game.
Okay.
This is it.
Yeah.
This is it, man.
Okay.
I'll ask you again when you get to the third playthrough. That's the big one, I think.
Yeah.
That's the big one. All right. So I played through all four playthroughs of the first Nier to kind of see its true ending. So I will probably stick it out with this one as well.
Cool.
But it's a good game. I recommend it. Yeah. Have I played anything else? I think I've been playing Divinity still.
Okay.
My friends and I actually just got to Act 3 last night. We're about 70 hours into the game now, and we're in Act 3 of, don't tell me how many, 4 or 5, I think. So we probably have a good month to 2 months to go before we finish that game.
I'm going to do this is going to be like a relationship test for me, because I'm going to Montana for like 2 weeks, my small hometown, Montana, over Christmas break. And I'm like, this is going to be the time I play Divinity. My significant other is coming home with me, so I'm curious if she'll let me just sit on my ass and play that for around 2 weeks or not.
You're not going to try to pull her into a co-op?
We'll see. But, I don't know. It's going to be an interesting and very tense break. But I call
that's,
it
what, that's what you want out of your Christmas break, right?
I got to know.
Just tons of tension.
You got to break that ice sometime. But this many hours in is I have a couple of like quick questions. Like, is the co-op still holding up over all that time, and are you still is it still as good of an RPG as it was when you started?
Definitely. I think the biggest issues with it are not really the game's issues. They're issues that are down to our scheduling and availability of playing it. And that there have definitely been multiple instances of like, we should have done something way earlier in the story to push along a quest, but we just forgot because we didn't play for 5 days and then just like didn't remember we were supposed to do that, or because you can be kind of spread out doing your own thing, someone maybe got some information that they either didn't convey to the other players or kind of just glossed over, they missed it. And so then that was telling you like, oh yeah, you should go do this thing. And then we didn't realize we should do it until much later. And just, you know, any game like this, there's so much going on that if you're playing it and then you put it down for a few days, you're gonna forget some, you know, some of the stuff you were doing, some of the quests that you could have found, didn't know all the info for. So we've definitely had some just like knowledge gaps that we've had to deal with when we pick it up again. It doesn't really make the game hard to play. It just, if you're being really completionist about it, or trying to do things in sort of like the optimal order,
right,
it's going to be a little messy. It's still really fun. We kind of had a hump we had to get over in the second act where everything we were trying to do was just too hard, and we kind of couldn't figure out like where we were supposed to go to do stuff that was our level. But once we got over this hump, it started playing a lot better. It was more fun. We're at a stage now where we have a lot of abilities on all of our characters, and like combat, we're starting to feel really badass. At least the enemies we're fighting against were kind of at level parity or even a little over leveled now. And I'm going from, I was hitting like okay and doing some damage to, I can like nuke some people in a turn now. It's really satisfying. So it's getting more fun on the combat side, and the story and everything continues to be really interesting. So
sweet.
Divinity is still a great RPG.
I'm excited to eventually play that, maybe.
And destroy your relationship in the process, I guess.
Maybe strengthen it. We'll see.
Maybe build one.
Exactly. Real quick, before we get to Austin, I want to call out two subscribers on Twitch. Jules M, who's been with us for a while now, just subscribed for 13 months in a row. He's one of our favorite mods.
Thank you, Jules.
We love him very, very much. And Apollo Dingle, my arch nemesis, who trolls me incessantly in our Discord chat, also subscribed for 13 months in a row. So thanks, I guess, for sticking with us, I guess. Just kidding. He's a lot of fun. So yeah, thanks for sticking around. It's been over a year. That's pretty wild.
Long time.
Yeah. Anyway, Austin, what about you, man? What you been playing?
I played just a bunch of old like PS2 RPGs over Thanksgiving break. But I've been sampling all of the roguelikes that I have pretty much on Steam. I've been like installing all of them, like old favorites like Enter the Gungeon and Dungeons of Dreadmoor and Risk of Rain especially. I love co-op. But then also trying to like hit the ones that kind of miss me. Like Grip and the Necro Dancer, which has been in like 13 Steam sales in the past month.
So good.
And then, it is really good. And Dungeon of the Endless, which is sort of a lesser known one, which is pretty cool.
I love that game. I evangelize that game to so many people.
Why? And then, tell me about it real quick. Just give me, Austin, give me your like Dungeon of the Endless pitch.
It's like it's sort of a room-based tower defense game where as you explore, like you open doors and that adds a room to your sort of grid. And then at the end of it, like each round you activate a wave and then enemies will spawn from the rooms you have unlocked and they'll work toward like this core you have to defend. And you have sort of this crew of like, it's like you're from a crashed spaceship. Are you prisoners? I don't remember like the backstory.
I don't know if you're
maybe some of them are
prisoners. Yeah, maybe some. You're like colonists or something. Yeah.
Yeah, you just have this kind of motley crew of people you unlock and find in the dungeon, and then everyone has abilities. So you place turrets down. You can like block off certain rooms using power. There's a lot of like unique kind of stuff to it that you don't get with like the usual action roguelike. It's really, really fun.
Cool. Dungeon of the Endless.
And then I'm forcing myself to play Spelunky again because Spelunky 2 was announced and everyone's excited. It was like our game of the year, and it's like one of our top rated indie games. There's all good reasons for that. It wasn't for me when I first tried it, so I'm forcing myself through it to try and acclimate, I guess.
Have you been converted yet?
Not yet. I'm still kind of having the same like fundamental problems I had with it.
You know, like, I bounced off it too, man. But yeah.
Heathens. You guys are heathens.
It's partly the controls, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's partly the controls. Like the ledge grabbing thing and like the fall speed just really messes with me. And then it's like there's also no kind of like external progress, I guess. Like in Risk of Rain and stuff, like you unlock new items, you unlock new characters. So it's like your pile of corpses from each of your runs adds up to something. And in Spelunky, even with the shortcuts, I feel like I'm always back to square one. I don't know, there's no like leaderboard, I guess, for me to kind of keep up with.
It is a very pure game in that sense. Yeah. Pretty much the only sort of meta satisfaction you can get from it is doing the daily challenges and kind of seeing how you rank up against other people. But yeah, I don't know. Spelunky is one of those roguelikes where the satisfaction is either in crazy shit happening in a run and like a great story coming out of that, or the accomplishment of doing it all in one go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. Anything else, man?
I hope I can. Mainly roguelikes, between bouncing between a million indie games for work, sampling as much as I can.
It sounds like you're positioning yourself to be ready to experience some true old school roguelikes. Some
be careful. Shit. This guy will try and convert you. Like by beckoning you over to his desk, or he'll maybe hey, you want to hop on a Google Hangout real quick and and then you ever heard of NetHack, man?
I'm not gonna let you forget.
Open his trench coat. You ever seen NetHack before? why roguelikes? Is it the time of the year? Just something to kind of.
They're kind of like the perfect break from long RPGs for me. Yeah. Like if I'm playing something like on the scale of The Witcher or whatever, just a really involved and engrossing game, like it's a nice kind of palate cleanser to do like two or three quick runs and then just like go die or get as far as I can. And it's like the best way to fill 30 minutes really. Hmm. And you can install like, you know, six or seven of them and get familiar with kind of their move sets and just kind of bounce around. They're really fresh. They're just so easy to pick up and put down. I find them really addicting.
Cool.
What about Nuclear Throne?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I actually haven't played that one, but I love Enter the Gungeon. So I figured I will.
Yeah. You definitely gotta.
Nuclear Throne is simpler than Enter the Gungeon, I think. But I think is the better game, or it's the game I prefer anyway.
I'd agree. I think Enter the Gungeon has a weird difficulty ramp, or I don't know. I don't know what it is, but like when I came around to World 2 or 3, I just like would almost always die at the same spot for hours.
The farthest I've gotten is 3. Yeah.
There's definitely like a drop-off point in terms of its overall progression or the way it teaches you things, or I don't. But either way, both great games.
Yeah.
Great game.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Well, I guess I'll talk about what I've been playing, which is also not a lot. Well,
do any puzzles, James?
Yeah, fuck, man. I should do it. I got a hardwood floor now, so I could like just get a big ass 3,000 piecer and throw it down.
No,
so,
your cat would.
Yeah, my cat would. My cat's an asshole. That. He's the worst. he's learned to climb on things now, and
is that your son? I always see on Twitter.
Yes, my son Charlie. yesterday I couldn't get into my house because he's learned to knock down the coat rack, which we didn't expect this to be a problem because we love him and we would expect him not to try and deceive and harm us. But
did he bar the door with
the coat rack? He bar the door with the coat rack. I unlock the door. I'm like, what the fuck? And I'm like sitting there. I literally don't know what to do right now. Like, I eventually kind of wiggled it and I was able to reach my hand in and like nudge it down. And there he was.
I think you might need to move your coat rack.
We did. We definitely did after that.
Maybe anchor it to the floor.
Yeah, we just got to drill
it. Some sandbags. We have some sandbags here at work, like for lights and stuff. You should maybe just take a sandbag home.
Cover it in acid. I don't know. We'll figure it out. I don't know. Cats are fun. That's its own kind of game. Did you guys hear about this game called Ode that kind of just dropped out of nowhere from Ubisoft Reflections?
Did they make Child of Light?
Sounds familiar.
I think it's Reflections. They made Grow Home and Grow Up.
Oh, okay.
The games where you play as
I do like those.
Yeah, they're fun.
Physics robot.
You play as a physics robot and you climb a giant beanstalks, I guess, into the sky, or plants into the sky. So they made this new game called Ode. I have not finished it. It's short. It's like $5. It's only on Uplay at the moment. It's also another very physics-based game. I don't know if I like it nearly as much as Grow Home, but you play a sprite of some kind in a glass, like a ball, that you roll around in a weird like
Sprite in like the fairy sense.
I don't know what the fuck you are. You're like a little star thing, but you have a butt. Like, it's really creepy how pronounced the butt is. Go look up Ode. Go look up Ode gameplay. And the very first thing you see is this little like sprite stand up, and it's got a huge tush. And you can't not see it. Anyway.
Ode to the butt.
So as you move around these environments, there's kind of these little balls you'll run over, and they magnetize to you. And eventually you accrue a ton of these balls.
Do they magnetize to your butt?
They magnetize around your butt, to and around your butt.
As its own orbit.
Yeah. and once you accrue enough balls, well, you can do this from the get-go. You have basically two things you can do, is you can either pull the balls toward you, so you can, from wherever they are in the environment, they'll just like come to you from no matter where they're at. Or you can like shoot them away from you. You can, you know, push them away. And if those balls touch any other balls, then those balls will then magnetize to you the next time you magnetize the balls to your butt. And it is basically just like a simple physics-y, experimental physics game that is just a platformer. You bounce around these environments and try and collect all the balls, and like if you touch certain plants in areas, they will then explode and play music and add to this, like everything in the environment. You touch it and it kind of plays a note or like a drum hit, or you know. And I would hesitate to call it like procedural music or anything, because it's kind of right. messy in that way, but it's at least like bright and playful. And when you accrue enough balls and shoot them away from your butt, it looks cool.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm envisioning like a butt-based Katamari kind of.
It's all
is my mental image of this game.
Why has nobody made that?
That would be a very good game. That would be a very good game.
It's Katamari. You just do it backwards. Like, that's the only difference. Yeah. You just use your butt to roll the ball.
But yeah, it's you know, for $5, I can see it being a cool little physics toy with some pretty expressive levels. I just don't like how it looks. It looks like Lisa Frank met Slime Tumbler, I think is how I described it. And
wow.
So if you don't know what Slime Tumbler is, be careful Googling that. But it's a thing. Anyway, moving on from Ode. It's cool. $5. Check it out. I also played a lot of Rainbow Six. Not a lot, but some Rainbow Six.
Siege has been hot at the PC Gamer office, I know.
It has been. I think I don't know what it was. Yeah, Evan's preview of the new operator and new map coming out next few weeks, I think, got me thinking about that game. I reviewed it when it came out, and I was just, like, enamored with it. I was like, one of the few outlets. I think we were one of the few outlets that reviewed it, like, fairly highly. I gave it a 90. I was just fascinated with the design, and I maybe overlooked hit detection and some connection issues that a lot of people were having, just because I was like enamored with that. They have since kind of ironed that stuff out, added a lot of new operators, some cool new maps, and it's become this wholly unique thing. It was already pretty unique, and now it, I don't know, it doesn't play like anything else. It's like competitive Home Alone or something. It's a truly strange game.
That's a really good sell.
Yeah, and I
yeah, it needs to be like a blurb in a trailer somewhere.
I have two questions, James. Yeah. One, when you play Rainbow Six at the pro level, which I'm sure you're
absolutely
at, do you use Gamer Grip?
Oh,
which is a product we have in our office for some
Greg,
reason.
Greg, can you zoom in on that, Greg? Greg's our cameraman, who's real.
Greg, what the fuck are you doing? Come on.
So I put some of this shit on. I don't know where we got this. We're going off track here, but that's okay. We got some Gamer Grip in. It's MLG endorsed, and it's a total grip solution. I got like Vanna White this. It's a total grip solution for gripping your gamepad or your mouse or your, you know, your slippery keyboard.
To be clear, this is not a sponsored segment. We just have this definitely shit, not. And it's fucking hilarious.
It says improve your game dash play. Used and endorsed by pro gamers and athletes. I thought pro gamers were athletes. Thank you very much. Yeah, I put some of this shit on when we first got it. I don't know why it's in here. It's kind of freaking me out, honestly. I don't know what they got up to in the podcast last week.
None of us were on the show last week. No. Something weird happened.
Something happened. I'll have to go back and listen or not. Yeah, putting this on feels like it gives you the sensation of having no moisture in your hands. And then over time, the sensation of your hand, your skin just dissolving because it just flakes off of you. But you know what? I didn't drop my controller. I got some sweaty ass mitts. Sweaty mitts. That's for you, Tyler Wilde. And it dried those suckers up like little skeleton hands.
Gamer grip. It's got what hands crave.
Yep. Yep. My girlfriend loves it.
So I have a real question now. Let's just move on. In Rainbow Six Siege, they've been adding operators at a pretty decent clip over the past year or year and a half, however long it's been out. Do you feel like there are too many now?
No, not at all.
It doesn't feel like in a MOBA where when they add one every 2 weeks, it's like this totally changed the game. I have to understand all these new abilities. And
not really. I mean, a lot of their abilities and capabilities sort of overlap.
Yeah. I was wondering if they repeat each other very much.
They do, but I mean, they are just... I don't know a lot of them by name, but there are like several operators that lay traps of certain kinds on the ground. And I mean, that is like a thing you just have to pay attention to in general, because there are just, you know, everyone has the ability to lay stuff on the ground, like barbed wire, or, you're going to be looking on the ground anyway for drones. So it's like sort of just here's an operator that specializes in shit you lay on the ground. And this thing they lay on the ground does this specific thing that you have to think about now, but it might disable electronic devices, or it might poison you or slow you or do something. It never complicates it to the point where the meta is just flipped on its head. You might see, I don't know, when a new operator comes out, you might see it might be surprising at first. But having not played that game in a while, I went back into it with almost no problem at all. And like,
that's good to know.
Yeah. I mean, that said, I was with some people who were fairly experienced and they were like tipping me off on things, but it wasn't like I was lost and totally just alone. I think it's fairly accessible in that way. Like, excuse me, as long as you understand like the fundamentals of that game, fortifying yourself and understanding like what to listen to and where people, the map awareness is probably the biggest thing. Knowing the map layouts is maybe the hardest point of entry.
Which I think is a hallmark of almost any good FPS.
Yeah. So I think once you get that stuff down, it's fairly simple to stay with it. And it was so much fucking fun. Go find Evan on Twitter. He's been posting clips over the weekend, and him and Tom, our old editor, they've been playing and have some really, really good stuff. Anyway, we've been talking about what we've been playing for a while now. I say we move on to something a little sad, a little confusing, a little upsetting, devastating to some, which is this Destiny 2 XP kerfuffle.
Okay. Yeah. If this has devastated you, it's perhaps reconsider your
my core west.
Your life priorities. I don't know.
I mean, like, it's hard for me to get. Well, first, let me tell people what happened.
I understand this has something to do with Pop-Tarts.
Oh my god! I was
tangentially.
Pop-Tarts, you know, your controversy is bad. It's a messy discussion. Pop-Tarts.
It goes deep, man. So. Last week, I think late last week, early last week, a Redditor, as they are known, posted their findings. They did a bunch of heavy research on XP gains in Destiny 2 based on, over time and while doing different activities like PvP, the raid, public events, and so on, and found out that over time, the XP they thought they were getting was not the XP they were actually getting, as
it was
reported.
Falling off, right?
Yeah. So some events it would fall off sharply, and some events less so. Even though the game was reporting you got plus 300 here or plus 300 there, it was not necessarily true.
Wait, so it was still showing a number that was not accurate?
Yeah, and that's where I think the the biggest outcry is, right, is
yeah, so it was telling you you're losing XP.
Wow, so I thought people just weren't noticing that they were kind of fudging the numbers, but they're literally showing you a different number than what
you're doing. I think that's why a section of the anger is totally warranted, because I don't want it would be less of an issue if this XP system was not also tied to the Eververse, which is their sort of like loot box. Every time you level up, you get a bright engram, which then gives you like a bunch of cosmetic shit, some mods maybe. You can also buy these, is the thing, right? So if there's any miscommunication or if you feel misled at all or lied to about anything that's tied to microtransactions, then I think, you know, anger is warranted, right?
Yeah.
So shortly after this was, you know, put out there, and I think we reported on it and a couple other sites did, Bungie came out and said in an official blog
pretty
post,
quickly,
how quickly they responded to this problem in particular sparked more outrage from a lot of fans, because they were like, you've been ignoring all these things we've been asking for,
right?
I mean, that's a whole nother thing.
And but with this, they just flipped a switch.
They said, we are turning this scaling system off, and they came out and said, like, how the system works is, you know, if you're grinding out public events, which is an easy way to get XP quickly, we drop that off more sharply over time, because some events that take longer but are maybe more challenging, you're not getting rewarded fairly. That was their like sort of justification. Still, why not just make that clear to begin with, right? And reflect that in the UI and in the notifications popping up on your screen. And so they shut it off. We are like, okay, thank you for responding. This was a no-no, Bungie. Don't do it again. Shortly after, what happens, Austin?
Yeah, 2 days later, we get an update from another report from some other Redditor who finds that, we're earning 100% XP in our, the numbers on our XP bar, which doesn't have like a counter, by the way. It's just you just have to guess how much you have left. There's no like X out of however much. So before it took 80,000 XP to get a Bright Ingram, and then they flipped the switch. We're getting full XP from everything all the time, but now it takes 160,000 XP to get a Bright Ingram. Yeah. So they fixed the system, they moved the goalpost, they doubled the XP you need to get a thing. And like somebody did the math where like the old system versus now, we're technically only getting like 6% more experience than we were before. So it's like we're still, you know, it still feels really throttled.
Yeah.
And then they also didn't say like, oh, it's going to take 160,000.
No, forgot to mention the double the XP part. And then yesterday, and we're still kind of waiting on this today, is they were going to do a stream today about the upcoming DLC Curse of Osiris, which they canceled. They came out and said, we're going to cancel the stream, we're going to postpone it because we're going to issue a statement, a blog post about this feedback and about this XP debate. And we're kind of, I think we're still waiting on that now. Yep. Hopefully we'll hear that later today.
Yeah, on pins and needles.
So it's going to be a really sweaty blog post.
We'll see how it goes.
I think all of the anger around those changes being so opaque is totally justified, especially because of, as you said, the way it's tied into the microtransaction model. It does bring up an interesting just element of game design. And if it was divorced from the microtransaction stuff, how much information do we really deserve as the player? And it makes me think of the way the original or like the 2012 or whatever XCOM 2014 XCOM works. I'm pretty sure I have this right, that if you actually look at the code for how accuracy is measured in that game, you know, you'll say you're aiming at an enemy and it gives you a 60% chance to hit. You don't actually have a literal 60% chance to hit because it has modifiers to that. So if you miss a 60% chance shot, the next time you have that 60% shot, it'll actually give you like kind of a bonus, an invisible bonus on top of that to give you a better chance to hit, so that you're not missing that shot over and over and over again. And the more times you miss it, the more of a bonus it gives you. And then it resets once you actually kind of land that kind of shot.
Yeah, and I can't remember exactly what game brought this up recently, but there was a lot of discussion lately around how that's just a common thing in games, right? Game design is games will withhold information or just outright lie to you and have since forever to make you feel a certain way to achieve a certain effect.
I think it works with drop rates the same. Yeah. Like some games drop rates are similar, right? Like you have a supposed 10% chance to get a legendary, but if you don't get a legendary, it gives you this invisible kind of bonus to that until eventually you get one, it resets.
Right. But tie that to, I mean, that kind of game design tied to whether or not they intended it for to, you know, they misled with the intent of making us feel a certain way or misled with the intent of like getting us to buy more shit. Tied to the system, it's not a good look. It's not a good look.
It's like, it's such an easy assumption to make that it's really easy to connect slow XP, incentivized to buy stuff, and then dirty loot box crap all over again. So it's easy, like bad taste in the mouth for sure.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see like kind of their response to everything today.
And this, by the time this podcast is out, we'll probably already know, but it'll be interesting, what they're going to do. But I'm curious, Austin, what do you think they can say? I mean, we don't have to talk about the minutiae of Destiny's endgame right now, but what do you think is going to be like the thrust of this post?
I wonder if they're going to like, maybe they feel like they overcompensated with the XP thing.
Yeah.
Like they put in a whole new system after the old one, and now they'll respond to this and kind of say the same thing. Like, we don't like how this system's working either. It feels too slow. It's kind of hard to like distinguish between what I want them to say and what I actually expect them to say.
Yeah. Hard to know. I mean, but based on how they changed things in the last game, I wouldn't be surprised just like over time. I don't expect tomorrow to see an overhaul, but like you said, just a new system entirely or new currencies that are, or items or whatever the hell they do this time around, to change things up completely. I'm either way extremely curious to see what the hell Destiny 2 becomes on the back of this first expansion and these, and season one ending and these whatever they announce today, you know.
It feels like the season one is going to be like, if anything, is going to be the major kind of opportunity, because like Tin and did his preview of the DLC Curse of Osiris, and he said it was good and it was fun lore wise and a good story, but didn't, you know, make any fundamental big changes to the systems and stuff. So maybe it'll be, you know, some follow-up updates.
Yep, hoping so.
Having not played Destiny 2 myself yet, I'm starting to feel good about the decision to follow my usual habit, which is playing something like 2 years after it comes out.
By the time Destiny 1 or The Taken King happened, I wanted to like scream from the mountaintops, come play this game.
It was a totally different game.
In a lot of ways. And I get the impression, I at least hope that it's a bummer this has to happen, but I get the impression that Destiny 2 will follow a similar path, a strangely similar path.
At least they wanted to rewrite the whole story this time, I guess.
Yeah,
for sure. But moving on away from, I'm so fucking sick of talking about like the insidious intent or not of
there's been a lot of cynicism in the headlines lately.
I want to move away from that and just celebrate something with you guys, and that is the video game music of this year. And to do this, we're gonna do a video game music quiz.
Do either of you have any musical talent skill? Can you play the acoustic guitar, James?
I want you guys to like try and guess what instrument I know how to play. Very well, by the way.
It's not the acoustic guitar.
It's not the it's not something I would sit in a college square hoping to impress people with.
I'm now trying to think of like the lamest musical instrument.
What do you think the lamest musical instrument is?
Well, now, shit, now I'm going to feel bad.
Is it the world's tiniest violin?
It's a little cooler than that.
I can tell you what I want it to be.
What's that?
The cello.
No, man, I'm not that cool.
I know, but I want you to be a cellist.
I'm a tuba player.
Okay.
I know how to play the tuba. Acceptable. The sousaphone. I used to do solos and duets and all of that shit.
Any ska band action?
No. People don't know what ska is, where I'm from.
Any big room?
No. Nothing. Hey, someone guessed tuba. Score pooler asked or guessed it. But music, let's get to it. So to do this is going to require a bit of setup. Austin, you want to? I'm going to call you on our other thing so you can hear.
Right.
We're going to be a bit echoey, so forgive us. I'll keep us muted until we get there. All right.
Okay.
And we're going to have to demagnify your face. Wes, I'm going to ask you to not look at this screen for a moment.
God. Oh, because the music's going
to
be on
there? Yes. I'm not an audio engineer, so I had to do a bit of...
Our setup here is a little a little convoluted.
The good news is we're moving to a bigger room soon, and I hope to streamline everything at that point. So, okay. Let me get the first tune up here. And I want you in the chat to try and guess it too. This is all going to be from mostly the second half of this year, because we did another one of these earlier in the year, if I remember correctly. All right.
Here we go. I didn't look at the list you put together because I didn't want to be a cheater for life.
Yes.
But I'm looking at chat and you can't stop me.
That's fine.
I'm not going to get any of these.
You guys can look at chat. I'm cool with that. All right. Austin, are you getting the echo? Can you hear us on both ends? No, you're not. So I have you muted.
Hey, I think you're muted in Discord.
There we go. Now I'm all echoey. Okay. Y'all ready? Here we go. First song. Pause it there. That's a good stop. Any thoughts? Any guesses? Anyone? No one in the chat is getting it.
It's not West of Loathing, I'm pretty sure.
It's kind of a tough one. I don't think a lot of people played this or knew about it even.
I don't know.
I will tell you. I'll start off by telling you the composer, Austin Wintory.
Of course.
Austin Wintory, excellent games, renowned games music composer. This is... Yeah, no one in the chat got it. Tooth and Tail.
Tooth and Tail.
Yeah.
So I totally forgot about this game. And
it actually just hit its final release about
a month ago?
2 months maybe?
Something like that.
It came out right around the same time Divinity did.
So I haven't played the game, but I love the at the bottom of their Bandcamp page, they have a fake anecdote about how the project came about, and it's a conversation between the Austin, the composer, and Andy, the lead developer. And it's here. This is how it reads.
Andy Schatz.
Austin. Well, here I'll be Austin, and you be Andy. Can you read that, Wes?
Sure.
Okay. We want to make a game about war, but we want to make it fun. What were some fun wars?
World War I was fun. So was the Russian Revolution. Super fun.
True. And so was starvation and cannibalism. Really goofy stuff.
So our game is all about building tension before short, explosive bursts of action. Maybe we should use tangos and Latin dance music as the basis for things. Real-time strategy is essentially ballroom dancing.
Yeah, and we can play it all using early 20th century Russian instruments. That makes sense.
Except our game is wild and raucous, so let's play the instruments drunkenly.
Will do. So that's the concept. That's the concept. By the way, yeah, these are all animals playing these instruments too, so it's extra special in that way for me. Okay, let's move on to the next song. How are we doing on time? Just making sure. All right, we're doing fine.
Yeah, got time.
No looking, Wes.
It's hard. It's right in front of my face.
I know. I'm sorry.
I put gamer grip over my eyeballs.
Oh, my God.
That would probably blind me.
Here we go. It might be a little quiet. I couldn't find a good video. Let me move. I'm going to skip ahead a bit. Play for a bit first. sounds like a broken air conditioner. Okay, skip ahead.
Okay. I'm into it.
Any guesses in the chat?
I haven't played it yet. It sounds, could be from Ruiner, maybe.
It's not a bad guess.
Skip ahead again.
Pretty metal.
No, it's still the same shape. No thoughts?
No clue.
All right.
Ruiner's a pretty good guess, but...
Looks like they got it in the chat.
I mean, like... It doesn't sound like Wolfenstein to me, but I haven't played Wolf 2 yet, so I don't know.
That's actually... And it's like... I think it's going to be a...
Lawbreakers?
No, it's Destiny 2. That's the Hive theme from Destiny 2. Mm. It's and probably... I don't think a lot of people will... When they think of Destiny 2's music, will like reflect on it and think, wow, this is did we lose Austin? I think we lost Austin.
Well, he
am I gone?
No, never mind. Never mind. I was just looking at
he was just lost in thought.
Gotcha.
I'm off screen.
Titan is a planet on Destiny 2, and it's sort of like the only place, I think it's the only place you fight the Hive, right? In all that game.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't think of seeing them anywhere else.
So it's not, once you play the main campaign, which like spends a very short time there, you're probably not going to hear the Hive music very often. So I think it's, it reminds me of like some old school FPS shit. Like
Quake. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you highlighted that. It's really metal because like the rest of the soundtrack is really like kind of grand and orchestral. People remember it like vistas on IO and stuff. But that's really cool. I couldn't pick that one out, but I like it.
I love it. All right, let's move on to the next one here. Eyes up, Wes. Eyes up.
Hopefully, I'll get one of these.
I think you might get this one. All right. Audience, prepare yourself. Prepare yourself. Sonic Mania. It's Sonic Mania. That's Studio. I don't know how to say it. That soundtrack is fucking excellent.
It is real good.
Sick.
Yeah.
I bought the vinyl of that actually.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Good call.
I haven't played the game yet.
But I have, pretty damn good.
But I have listened
to
it.
Yeah, put aside a rainy Sunday and put on your pajamas and get out there with some cereal and play some Sonic Mania.
That'll be a fun throwback.
Very good soundtrack. Someone guessed Persona 5, and I was just going to say that's not a bad guess either.
Fair.
Yeah, that is a good guess.
This is the PC Gamer Show.
Not on PC, but good guess.
Hopefully someday people got to play Persona 5. Let's move on to the next song here. All right. All right, here we go. Get out your glow sticks.
Pretty sure I have not played this game.
It's kind of like that for 2 minutes, so we'll cut it off there. Any thoughts here?
That one was good, though.
Yeah, it is really good. I have no idea. Let's see.
Throw it out there.
I can't even think of
it. It's okay. I was hoping to just disorient you guys.
Stump the shit out of
us. Yeah, basically just to teach everybody, including the chat. That's Nidhogg 2.
Oh, okay.
Nidhogg 2.
I haven't played nearly enough Nidhogg. We played it in the office a little bit, and that's all I've played.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Excellent soundtrack this time around. The first one was pretty good, but fairly subdued. This one is just all over the place, and I love it.
Yeah, that's real good.
Befitting its wild, graphical.
Oh, it's new look style for sure. Okay, we got time for a few more, I think.
Who did the music for Nidhogg? Do you know?
It was a couple groups. I think they for the original one or
for this one. Yeah.
For this one's a couple different groups. It's on the official OSTs, like on Spotify and other places like that. But yeah, I think a lot of indie devs are going the Hotline Miami route and saying, hey, existing artists.
It's a good route to take.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, you get some really good stuff out of it.
Let's move on to another here. Eyes up. And I'm hoping we don't get an ad on YouTube. Oops, okay.
This one I have heard.
Yes.
Some chanting, some Gregorian monks or something.
Love it. That song sticks with me. That theme, and there's a lot. I like the fact that you can augment that with the instrument of your choice.
Yeah. So if you haven't played Divinity, at the beginning of the game, it asks you what your like character's musical affinity is, what instrument you can play, and it's flute, cello, lute, and guitar. I think
something else. Maybe
something like that. Yeah. And each, depending on the choice, that instrument is like overlaid into like the battle theme, and I don't know, maybe all of the music. I don't know.
It affects
the game music in a really interesting way. And you'll also occasionally run into characters that have some kind of musical they're a musician or something, and you, if depending on the instrument you play, you can talk to them and play a little ditty or something.
It's really cool. Oh, Shushuke
says, I want to be an undead cellist.
You can 100% be that.
It's so good. Shushuke says, no tuba in Divinity Original Sin 2. I'm sorry to report that there's no tuba in Divinity Original.
But there is extensive mod support. Just throw it out there. Oh,
please, somebody.
Right, we get that piano battle mod theme. Stat.
All right, let's do a couple more here. Eyes up, Wes. Eyes up. Here we go. All right.
Ooh.
Yeah.
A little creepy.
Okay, this has to be Ruiner.
Go back to Ruiner.
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 Okay.
Let it. You're in the Cyberpunk Club, wearing your trench coat. Pop a couple stims.
That's like the red.
All right. And just like Hotline Miami and these other games, Ruiner soundtrack is a collective effort from a couple groups. So also just an excellent, very subdued. There's some like dancey stuff in there, but it's never like as boisterous as Hotline Miami. It's very kind of quiet and moody with a couple tunes that, you know, have enough going on.
It's kind of a darker game,
lower levels.
I mean,
yeah,
I mean, Hotline Miami is dark in its own ways, but also very colorful and flashy.
I hear good things about Ruiner.
Hotline Miami is like sillier, where Ruiner is kind of gritty.
Definitely. I still got to go back and finish that, but I liked what I played. Okay, let's move on again. I think everyone's going to get this immediately.
Cuphead.
God damn it, Austin.
But now I'm excited.
Thank you.
War II?
Yeah, this is the Normandy music. Cuphead soundtrack is fucking amazing.
Yeah, it is so good. It has some of the best, just like Big Room and Ragtime and jazz in games. So good.
Good shit.
Yeah. I think Evan shouted it out in our a couple weeks ago in our best favorite music.
Yes, something like that. Yeah.
For the weekend.
Yes, that's right. That's right. He did. It's like 2 hours of just nonstop big band stuff.
The game has style to spare. And has sold over a million copies on Steam now.
Yeah, on Steam.
On Steam alone. So it's probably at 1.5 to 2 million, including the consoles, which is nuts.
Excellent.
When was the last time
to see that game
sold that well?
I don't know, right?
1994, probably.
It says a lot about what people are down to play still. It's
Yeah, it's nice to see that game do so well after such a long story of development.
Yeah, drawing all that shit took a long time. That sounds like a mad way to iterate on on levels like that. Okay, let's do we got time for a few more. So I'm going to keep going until we can't. Let's get another here. Okay. Kapow. Good shout.
It definitely feels like it could have fit in Hellblade.
I really like Assassin's Creed Origins tunes. It's especially
it's very drifting down the river.
Yeah. And it's maybe not as obvious in the official soundtrack, but when you're playing, a lot of it is kind of subtle. Glitched out in very subtle ways, almost like you're streaming music on a 56k modem and you get it drops for a bit, the quality drops for just a second. It's not garbled nonsense, but you get a little an artifact kind of effect in there.
I'm betting they used pure legitimate Egyptian instruments for parts of the soundtrack or for all of the soundtrack.
Yeah, I would hope so.
I wouldn't be surprised.
It's it sounds really nice.
Ubisoft is, I think, always had a pretty good handle on music, both in its games and Ubisoft's early trailers. Maybe not even early, but their Xbox 360 era, they did trailers so well.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember the trailer?
I still remember the Assassin's Creed ones, Brotherhood, great trailers.
The uncle Lonely Soul trailer for the first Assassin's Creed was fantastic. The Far Cry 2 trailer set to I just lost the name. The song from the band that did the intro to House just completely vanished out of my mind. I'm going to have to look it up now.
Go for it.
While you queue up the next song, but great, great trailer for that
okay game. Make sure you don't look at the TV. I gotta play this one for me. Here we go, another song coming up.
Massive Attack, that's the band.
Oh, there you go. Not this song. That's the voice.
I've definitely not played this.
All right, I'll pause it there. That's from a game called Oikospiel.
Fucking, I knew it was going to be Oikospiel.
I knew it was your pet game. I was going to call it.
Oikospiel is a very strange game. I'll hesitate trying to describe it, but I'll just say dog opera and leave it at that. That's a song called Go On / Salt and Scab. And that voice you heard was like a cut, chopped, screwed, glitched Celine Dion singing My Heart Will Go On. Yeah. Very, the game is all about its music, and it's very, very important.
Apparently my ability to recognize remixed Celine Dion is poor.
Damn it, Wes. You disappoint me. You disappoint my mother. All right, let's do a couple more.
I just love that according to chat, Wolfenstein 2 has an unbelievably diverse soundtrack.
Does it?
They're
call it every time. Right. I think it's a meme at this point.
Is Celine Dion singing in Wolfenstein 2? Is that her?
All right.
I have a question. Having not played Wolfenstein 2, yes. Do the monkeys show up at any point, the band? Like, not the characters, just their music. Because I feel like that would just be great.
You know, I don't recall.
Like, can you imagine an action scene in which you're, like, just mowing down Nazis, trying to catch a train, and, like, Last Train to Clarksville is playing?
Oh, my God. That would be pretty good.
I feel like that would have fit that game.
That would be an excellent idea.
Moving on.
All right, let's do this. All right. Boing. Here we go.
It's Hollow Knight. Okay. It felt like Hollow Knight to me, but I forgot that they had that level of orchestration.
Right.
In the game.
When you imagine that kind of, you know, game, my mind should have something.
That's one of the boss fights, right? One of the boss themes?
Yes. I don't exactly know which one it is. Dung Defender, maybe? No. Maybe not. Either way, it's just a very full soundtrack.
Oh, the track name's Hornet, so I think that's
Hornet. Oh, that's Hornet's theme.
Right? Yeah.
There you go.
Great game, Hollow Knight.
God, it's so good. So good.
Game of the game. If you like the soundtrack for that, you'll probably like the soundtrack for Child of Light. They both have a lot of strings in them. Very dramatic.
I missed that game. Shall I go back and play Child of Light?
I had a lot more fun with it than I thought I would.
All right. Yeah, I will. I'll do that. All right. Let's do. We got time for one more. One more. What am I going to close it out on? Is a good question, though.
It's not.
We already did Orchestra, so I have no idea.
You know, that might be. All right, I got it. Here we go. Night in the Woods.
All right.
I was trying to press pause there for like 5 seconds. That's Night in the Woods.
Night in the Woods.
A huge soundtrack. Cool. Worth highlighting, not just for the stuff you hear as you play. It's pretty damn good. Also, I think the soundtrack is also by one of its main programmers, Alec Halaqua. I don't know how to say his name. Halaqua. Who also made Aquarius.
Okay.
Is that what it's called?
There is a game Aquarius,
yeah. Kind of one of the first indie darlings, you might say. Yeah, excellent soundtrack. not just for everything you hear, but because there's a game within the game called Demon Tower, I think. And that game you play on this character's computer has its own like rad 8-bit kind of metal influenced soundtrack. Sweet. Which is also cool. So yeah, a lot of really good music. I'm still digging. I'm like just on the surface right now as I kind of sift through a lot of smaller games, which I can like boot up almost any indie game now and they have excellent music. So it's going to be a tough call to narrow it down this year, but skimming the surface, I'm extremely happy with this year. Let's get Austin back on screen if we can. Oops. And move on to Twitch Q&A. Can I let you noodle with that, Wes?
I have no idea how you have this right. set up, so this could... We may never see Austin again.
That would be tragic.
It was a good run.
What is he on, Skype?
He's on the Twitch app right now. I'll get our questions queued up right now. And... So for everyone in chat, if you have a question, we're going to do our Twitch chat Q&A. Tag at PC Gamer in chat.
Wait, Austin is in the Twitch app?
Yes, he's that guy. The SpongeBob.
Why is he SpongeBob?
I don't know why he's SpongeBob. I don't know where his face went either. So tag at PC Gamer in the chat with any question you have. And we'll get to it as soon as we possibly can. We do favor people in the PC Gamer Club. If you want to know more about that, you can go to club.pcgamer.com. They've already prepped me with a bunch of questions in our community Discord that you get an invite to. I don't know where his face went. There it is. Okay.
Oh, my God. That was awesome.
Yes.
Is my face huge again?
So, yeah, just drag him to the other window, and I can get the Magnify app. Up and
you're gonna have to do this. I have no idea how you set this up. You did not prepare me for
it's very for professional
maintenance here.
Sorry, man. It's very professional, as you can see. Check this magic out, guys. This is the magic of Windows.
You can do anything you put
want
your
something
mind
bigger. Kajink. Let's just zoom onto his face. Let's
get I also that framed couldn't nicely. See the TV. So I had no idea what you're talking
about. Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, sorry. Boom. Austin's back. Back to the club. So if you want to get your questions in the day before or you want to get them read first, you can go to club.pcgamer.com to learn more about our monthly offering, our monthly subscription service, which gets you quite a bit more than just an invite to our Discord, which you know, there's a lot going on. We have our Destiny clan in there. We have... We're always experimenting with bots. Wes has a trivia bot in there that people love. I tried a music thing, which I will try to get working again.
Is it not working anymore?
It just has problems.
My bot works great. I don't know what your problem is.
I'm not a robot expert like you. But beyond the Discord, you get access to a digital subscription to the magazine, a digital version of the RPG. What is it called? The Ultimate Guide to
RPGs.
RPGs, which has some really, really cool stuff on the legacy of RPGs on the PC. You get an ad-free experience on the site, both desktop and mobile. So that's nice. You get a big glossy JPEG, digital JPEG, of Tub Geralt.
Do with it what you wish.
You get a free game every month, and you get access to whatever keys that happen to land in our lap or we get for betas or, you know, other free games. So we throw whatever we can your way when we get it. You know, there might be exclusive items, and in I think we had a big hit in RuneScape a couple months back. And we're working on getting more, so stay tuned for that. Anyway, let's get to the questions. I got them queued up right here. First up, we have one from Nelson, who is a contributor to PC Gamer. He writes for a column for the mag about developing, because he himself is a developer. And I'll read that right now. He says, "What's the cheapest game you've bought that you unexpectedly came to love?" Anything take you by surprise? So maybe not the absolute, but is there anything that you've bought in a sale or offhand, just browsing, you know, superficially looking at the cover and saying, this might be for me?
This is probably very obvious in hindsight, but I think Portal 2 is the only game that I've ever actually felt like significant guilt over how much I paid for it.
Did you get it
later? I think I bought it not that much later, but yeah. I think I bought it when it was $25 instead of $50 and felt bad that I had only paid $25 for it. I was like, this game is worth every penny. Yeah. But you know, these days you can get Portal 2 or most games on Steam for, you know, $1.50 or $5 or something. Yeah. So I'm sure there are some even dirt cheaper examples.
Yeah, I think $1.50 is about what I paid for a game called Sangfroid Tales of Werewolves. It's a really kind of old, weird tower defense game. It's like this top down. Reminds me of Sanctum, where you put out all these traps and stuff, and then you go into the waves yourself to shoot wolves and like werewolf pack leaders and stuff. You play as like these two big lumberjack dudes up in the mountains. It was really like unique, and it was dirt cheap. I picked it up on a whim, and it turned out to be a lot of fun for I think like maybe like 10, 15 hours or so.
Right on. Sangfroid what?
Sangfroid Tales of Werewolves, Tales I think. Sangfroid something werewolves.
Cool. Check it out. Me, I mean, there's been 1,000 small games that I've paid nothing for and loved. I think VVV
might be
a great example. I think I bought that because I know Terry Kavanaugh's games and I like them, and I got it in a sale years after it came out, and it's now I think my favorite platformer ever. Also has some excellent music. When I was a teen, I got like the original Black and White in a garage sale or something. It was a miracle the CD key worked, and I played that game forever. That was like a formative game for me. And I don't know, it didn't cost me anything, but yeah, I don't know. It's happening all the time with the way game prices dip nowadays. You can get Wolfenstein 2 already for half price. So I mean, a lot of cheap deals.
Somebody traded me a copy of The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time for a copy of GoldenEye. I traded away GoldenEye for Zelda, and damn. I had never played a Zelda game before.
Oh, shit, really?
And that changed my life.
Oh, my God.
For sure.
That's a hell
and
of
I think
deal.
He wanted it back, and I said no.
Yeah.
The deal's a deal.
Someone just put in chat, I saw, apparently that werewolf game is free now.
Oh, damn.
Don't get cheaper than that.
No, that's a hell of a deal. Go check it out. Next question. Matrix Blue. What are your thoughts on game streaming services such as NVIDIA Now? I don't know. Right off the bat, I can say I don't think much about them because I don't need them. And the services out there, like, I don't know. They don't seem until... you know, something like fiber infrastructure becomes available everywhere, then it's hard to even think about as being like a normal way to play games or an accepted common way to play games.
I'm sure they're a lot better than they were a few years ago. Yeah. I haven't really messed with any of them thoroughly. There's a few options out there for streaming. I assume we're talking about streaming from a server and not... So NVIDIA has like a couple... things here, and I don't remember which is called which.
Their branding is confusing.
They have the one that you do through their driver software where you can just stream your games from like system to system on your own network, similar to Steam has in-home streaming. But then NVIDIA also has, I thought it was called Grid, but maybe they just renamed it, the ability to pay, you know, a $15 a month fee or something and then stream games from a high-powered server somewhere, similar to Gaikai or OnLive was kind of the initial attempt at this. And I think none of those services are worth using if you kind of have your own library of games or like a competent system. But eventually, when you have a fast enough internet connection, that's going to be the kind of the way to go, because why buy new hardware when you can just stream anything to...
Right.
A screen, essentially, you know, something like a Switch with even weaker hardware where you just have a controller, you know, or a mouse and keyboard Bluetooth to it or whatever.
I don't know. Yeah. Exciting future ahead where, I don't know, all our computers go away.
Yeah. Right now we own our games. So.
Makes me sad, actually.
Yeah. I feel like there's like a lot of things there with like ownership and like you're gonna have to pay for stuff you don't own, and then you have to have a big enough benefit. I think Wes makes the key point is that unless you're like getting some sort of performance advantage over all the immediately accessible digital storefronts we already have, then there's really no point.
Yeah, I mean, and even over time, if a year of a service costs as much as a new PC, then why?
Right.
Or whatever I need to buy, then
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll tell you when we're 50 or whatever. Arctic2Noob asks, what's the best way to eat without making a mess while PC gaming? This is a real question for me.
Cause, probably don't.
I mean, well, I was going to say don't, but
come on. Come
on. I'm not saying that I don't. I'm just saying realistically.
No, I do all the time, but
we all do.
That is the 100% way.
You know, I don't think there's like a real method, but I can say this. Like, do not perch your beverage in front of you. Keep your beverage away. Make your beverage something you have to consciously reach for and bring to you and then put back. Because I can't tell you how many fucking times I've spilled something on my keyboard and haven't learned from it. Especially when I was playing, when I first got an Oculus, or I was dinking around with an Oculus, I stupidly knocked, like, I kept my beer in front of me while wearing a headset. I don't think I've done anything worse in my life. Obviously, I knocked it onto my keyboard and it dripped onto my PC.
Maybe try to stick to foods that you eat out of a bowl with a spoon, but are not liquid.
Don't do snacks. Don't do snacks that are hand snacks unless you have like a dish towel nearby.
Like a power bar situation is a good way to go, right? Because it's not gonna, the spill of that is not significant.
I don't recommend granola or crummy foods because your keyboard's gonna.
My secret is to have an L desk with mouse and keyboard on one branch and then put whatever the hell I want on the other. All the mess is over there.
That's smart.
But I can't actually. I was gonna say I can't tell you how many times I have. I've done it twice now. Elbowed like an entire pitcher of water off my desk, turning my chair.
Why do you have a
pitcher on your desk?
like enormous cup of water, just completely.
Dude's thirsty. This is the thing about the South. You maybe I don't know. Montana has to have giant cups, right? You go to restaurants and they just give you 24-ounce cups.
Yeah. We got.
This is every restaurant you go to in the South. If you get a Coke, it's like 24 ounces.
If you see anyone over the age of like 38, they are walking around with a big cup they've been reusing. Like my dad knows buddies. Cup. Yeah, that he's been reusing forever.
Like my dad has giant cups from like the movie theater from 10 years ago. Exactly. We still have.
The other solution to not spilling at your desk, Gamer Grip. Get some Gamer Grip on your hands.
To improve your game dash play.
You'll never drop anything again.
Next question. Janrin asks, back to the cynicism, what is our anti-game of the year, a.k.a. the worst game you've played this year? It's kind of hard because I don't play a lot of bad games.
At least not long enough to like really commit them to memory.
Yeah, bad games. My anti game of the year.
I mean, what have we reviewed lowest this year? I don't even know.
You know, nothing really comes to mind. Like I've enjoyed it all. I'm just
okay. I do have one.
Oh, you got one.
So I don't review many games for the site, typically. It's just not my beat. But I did review the first episode of Telltale's Guardians of the Galaxy.
I did not think much
of it.
Yeah,
It's not terrible. It's just like the exact, when I say Telltale's Guardians of the Galaxy, it's the exact thing you think you're going to get, which is like kind of a version of those characters trying to be just like the movies, but without the quite the same degree of humor and personality, but trying to do that with like the same, you know, 70s classic rock score and, you know, the art's like, it's fine, but it's just that Telltale engine that's looked the same for years now. The choices are in that exact same format, just, you know, nothing whatsoever surprising about it.
Right.
And so I think I gave it a 50 or 60 or something like that. It's just very middle of the road. It's probably the worst thing I've played this year.
Damn. Well, there's your answer. PC Gamer's anti game of the year.
I think Sonic Forces reviewed really low as well.
Oh Yeah, that's probably a good candidate too, because like we also got the best Sonic game in years.
Yeah,
months before. So if there's anything that represents the anti game of the year, that might be a good.
Yeah, I would example. Definitely not say Guardians of the Galaxy is like one of the worst games made this year. It was just very average.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, and it's all relative, right? It's like based on what you've played. So if you only played, three games, and your worst game might be still pretty good.
Exactly. I only play good games. I don't know about you guys. So it's good taste. Got a nose. Good nose for it.
Destiny 2.
Destiny 2. This is the problem. All I play is Destiny 2 anymore. We got a few more questions from Twitch. Hacksaw76. Where did James get his shirt?
Did you get your shirt?
Do you guys know? I don't know. No, I got this as a
present. Wait, it says Obey on it.
Obey. The Obey store.
Is it?
I got it as a present from my girlfriend.
Is this a They Live shirt?
It might be. Oh, my God.
Are all the little polka dots on it like skeleton heads?
Probably. There's a message if you stand far back enough. It's like, don't it's buy stuff.
Took on a new wrinkle.
Yeah. It was my birthday yesterday, and I got this as a present from the person who lives with me who somehow likes me still. So I don't know. A cool story.
She gave you a shirt that says Obey on it. So
well, there's some subtext here. I'll have to text her after the show. has muffins. So Steam got rid of flash deals, got rid of the community events, and now got rid of the cards this sale. Oh, I just think like not Steam cards overall,
the
but
specialty ones.
Specialty
right.
cards.
Oh yeah.
How you digging Steam is their question. How do we feel about Steam? Take stock 2017. What Steam got us thinking about.
I mean, we've written a good bit about Steam this year, yeah. I think, and some of the things we believe that they should fix and improve and what developers mm-hmm. think they should change. I don't really care about a lot of that stuff personally. I think the changing flash sales was for the best.
Yeah.
I think it worked out better for developers, for sales of their games. It's better for consumers because a flash sale is kind of it's not predatory, but it's a thing that plays on your instinct of like, oh shit, this is only available for X amount of time. I better buy it.
Yeah.
And that's not, that's not the case now. You know a game's right. going to be on sale for the week or whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
But there's a lot of issues there with curation that I think they need to try to do better at with so many games hitting the platform now. You know, when there's 1,000 games coming out every year, it's a lot easier for people to just discover new stuff without that being built into the system. When there's 6,000, yeah. 7,000 games, it's too many. You got to do more.
Yeah, it's kind of been like the through line of Steam discussion throughout the year. That's one thing that affects developers and consumers is the sheer, like how things are curated based on the sheer volumes of games coming in. And I think a lot of it is like Steam Direct hasn't been the best improvement on Greenlight and all that. And then like there's like a lot of sort of algorithmic curation on Steam, which hasn't been as effective as more, qualitative human, direction.
Definitely.
That's definitely something they can improve on is to help divide up and direct and also gatekeep all the games coming into Steam. Cause there's, we figured there's gonna be more next year.
Yeah. We thought Greenlight or turning off Greenlight would sort of stem the flow of I don't know, shovelware, yep. if we still want to call it that, but mm-hmm. there's, I don't know. It feels like that problem has been heightened and almost made worse.
Yeah, like if you look
I didn't think getting rid of Greenlight was gonna solve that.
I think some portion of people thought it might, like, oh, here's this cash wall you have to pay.
Yeah, I think
Yeah, the debate there was what if they set it higher?
Right.
What if it costs $5,000 to put your game on Steam instead of $100? I kind of lean in the direction of democratization and that lower number, but obviously that brings its own issues.
Well, and I think that's, curation is the problem almost every storefront is trying to solve, whether it's the App Store or, mm-hmm. Google Play or whatever the fuck you want. It's a huge issue. So I don't know. We'll see. I trust Valve to at least like eventually do something about it because they will have to, and they have been known to chip away at these things
in their own way. They tend to kind of like save up feedback and then make mammoth pushes after a few years.
Yeah. So
it's almost like the internet is a giant fire hose constantly bombarding us with water and we're all drowning.
Exactly. And with that, I think it's time to go. again, you can catch us every week, 1 p.m. Pacific time on twitch.tv/PCGamer. You can catch up with us with the VOD afterwards at youtube.com/PCGamer. Or you can just go to PCGamer.com/tag/podcast to subscribe to our RSS feed on iTunes or whatever podcast service you like, and listen to us on the go. Just our voices, though. You don't get our pretty faces. And if you want to know more about the club, again, that's club.pcgamer.com. Get your questions in early there. We really appreciate that.
Before we go, I actually have a question for our listeners.
Yes.
So those of you who have been longtime internet users probably used AOL Instant Messenger at some point in your life, maybe heavily, maybe just a little bit. It's going offline really soon, about 2 weeks. December 15th, I think, is the last day for AOL's servers to be up. When you used AIM as a teenager or whenever, you know, in whatever point in your life you were using it, if you used it for the purposes of going into chat rooms and hanging out with people, especially gaming chat rooms, I would like to hear sort of about your experience, hear some stories if you have them. We're going to put together some stuff around AIM for its death. So if you could email letters@PCGamer.com. And, you know, if you have a story to tell, just put it in the email, or if you want me to, you know, prompt you with some questions, either way, just reach out. And if you have some weird, sordid, heartwarming tales of AIM chat rooms, hit me up.
It was just me in seventh grade trying to talk to girls.
How'd that go?
Poorly. My username, Low Fatty Patty. Don't ask. Okay. That's all the time we have. We'll see you guys next week.